It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry. Also, just calling in, I want to welcome Philip Manning. Welcome, Philip. And also on the phone, we have Zaz Hollander. Thank you, Zaz, for calling in.
No problem. Good to be here.
Well, I was thinking we would start with you, Philip. We haven't heard from you for a while. I know that one of the topics of interest down in this area has been the way in which the water in the rivers has risen. What are the water conditions up there in Talkeetna?
Particularly southwest of Talkeetna, the Yetna River reached moderate flood stage a couple of days ago. That has since receded, and no flooding here in Talkeetna or Trapper Creek proper, but folks are definitely keeping a very close eye on the rivers, given how much rain we've had in recent days.
Okay, that's, of course, down here we've had a couple of instances of some very sad news. I think, Zaz, you covered a bit of that, where a woman and child perished in the cold
water. Yeah, the Matanuska River is running fairly high, and the Mat River is one of those rivers that flooding is almost secondary sometimes to erosion. But in this case, as far as I know, neither factored into the fact that there was a 5-year-old boy who, there isn't a lot of detail as to exactly what happened, but I think any of us who have taken our kids to that river can imagine, unfortunately, the boy was playing in or walking in what was probably a very shallow part of the river and got into trouble somehow and got swept away, and his mother jumped in after him and was also swept away. So really, obviously a tragic story. And it's easy to see if you look at the Mat River. I don't know exactly where this happened. As I said, there haven't been a lot of details officially released, but there are any number of sections that, unless you're on a back channel, you go from, you know, knee-deep on a 5-year-old to the main current very quickly. And it's a very swift and very cold river.
We have often used the river area. There's an access where the old Glen crosses over the Matanuska River just outside of Palmer. And what I've noted is that entire riverbed area has become increasingly popular with campers and dog walkers, et cetera, et cetera. But I have experienced, noticed just what you're saying, very swift current that's just a foot or two off. The other interesting water-related topic that is south from Palmer was in Eagle River. I don't know if any of you have crossed, taken the Crow Pass Trail over from Girdwood to Eagle River. I've had the pleasure of doing that and the pleasure of crossing the Eagle River, which is very, very cold as well. And a young woman who had done some preparation but had incurred some injury was in trouble there. And the good news from there is there apparently is a dog, 7-year-old husky by the name of Nanook. You couldn't make this up, who belongs to someone at the south end of that trail and apparently likes to accompany hikers to Eagle River and then runs on back. And the woman found that dog leaping into the river as she was struggling to cross it and helped her out. Incredible little story.
Yeah, it was that story. I didn't report it for our paper. Matt Tunseth did. But it was a really nice, bright spot in a really grim week of news, including, you know, bad news about a bear mauling in Eagle River off Highland Road.
Right. And then of course, an attack by the bear of one of those people who were looking for the person hurt. It appears that at the beginning of this summer, there are dangers that we should be aware of, whether it's water-related or just being on a trail and being alert. Philip, up there in your area, I know there are some wonderful trails. There's certainly a lot of water available. Have you any bear-related instances or anything of that sort?
Thankfully, not yet. But like you said, there, you know, this is definitely bear country up here. So anytime folks go out, I know that's one of the things they get warned about is you've got to kind of keep your head on the swivel for bear, and at this time of year for mama moose with their babies, mm-hmm. because they can get very protective this time of year.
That's true. Well, let's continue with Philip for a moment here. I know that there have been topics that had come up, we have looked at, and they range from the timber sales. Is there any further action on timber?
Not yet. Well, the transportation plan for Cheegit Creek has been submitted, and I just got an email not too long ago about the Trapper Creek Road Service Area Advisory Board's response to that. So haven't read through that yet, but there will be a response to that, and I know there's a lot of concerns because Orwell Road, the main road they're going to be using to get out onto the highway, there's some concern there because it's a very narrow road.
And Philip, I don't know how carefully you've looked at the plan. I scanned it and haven't looked at it carefully, the proposed plan. It didn't seem to include any kind of remarkable safety measures. There's a lot of signage that they're volunteering to put up and, you know, warning people when trucks are on the road. I believe they're going to desist when school buses are on the road. So there's some voluntary actions that they're taking.
Yeah, no, that's what I saw as well. And so one of the things that had been discussed when this all came up was, you know, are there going to be additional turnouts, mm-hmm. or anything like that? And the answer seems to be no. There aren't plans at this point for additional turnouts for people. You know, an 18-mile road, there's 3 turnouts along that road at this point. So if you meet a truck head-on, what's going to happen? That still seems to be a bit of an open question.
Is there any estimation of how many people live up that road full-time, and then how much it, I think it's a bit like the Big Lake area that bulges on the weekends when recreation people come or people that are hoping to retire someday there? Does anybody have any estimations on that?
I haven't seen any hard numbers.
But Terry, that's a very good comparison, because on the weekend there are a lot of folks that own cabins up there, that mm-hmm. sort of thing, second mm-hmm. homes. But no hard numbers at this point that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you have mentioned increase in numbers of people that typically come up and are going to enjoy fishing. There have been some significant changes in the guidelines. Most notably, I think, because of its large impact, is the closing of these subsistence netting at Chitna. What's the situation in the Talkeetna area with streams, et cetera?
Well, I think at this point, you know, the sport fishing guides have already had to make some major adjustments at this point. So I think for a lot of them, king salmon fishing has already kind of been pushed aside in favor of, there's a lot more fly fishing going on at this point. There's focus on some of the other salmon species. Last year, there was a very strong silver run up here, and I think maybe a lot more folks are focusing on utilizing that as a means of, when people come in from out of state, of getting them a, you know, wild-caught Alaska salmon at this point.
Yeah, I'm going to be really interested to see how this affects the bed tax situation and how many people. I mean, Alaska's had a couple of rough years here, more than just a couple, of not having access to king salmon, which a lot of people fly up here to catch that big king salmon. And I'm really interested to see at the end of the season how, and I'm not sure they can differentiate, or just what the impact of our tourist season is going to be, and all the businesses, particularly the smaller ones up in your area, Philip, and just around, that are just not going to, you know, be able to reap the benefits of that because of a poor fishing season on that species.
So, Philip, I have another question about the Talkeetna area. We recently, Amy Pettit recently interviewed a couple of people associated with industrial hemp production here in the state of Alaska. And, of course, there's been the legalization of cannabis in Canada and some changes in increasing numbers of retailers, et cetera, particularly in the Anchorage area. And I'm wondering how the situation is working itself out in Talkeetna.
Well, we still have there's one dispensary up here at this point, right on Main Street in downtown Talkeetna. There's a manufacturing facility that's also been approved by the board. I think they're still waiting on their final site inspection. But there's a small handful of cultivators as well up here. And As far as day-to-day life goes, I think most people don't really notice any sort of change or difference as a result of that. But that might change in the future as well, especially, you know, one of the things that's always been difficult in Alaska as far as cannabis cultivation, sale, and that sort of thing is transportation. And so something that I was thinking about with the recent legalization in Canada is there a possibility that there's a new, you know, potential supply line coming into Alaska that maybe a large portion of the United States wouldn't be able to take as much advantage of as Alaska could. So that, it remains to be seen what the ultimate effect of that is, but could have an impact up here.
Supply line in and out.
Exactly, exactly. Less nervous at border crossings now.
Yeah, I think they still have that huge hurdle of the banking, which it sounds like even on the federal level, there's some movement on that. But I think that's probably one of the big barriers is not just the transportation, it's just the whole issue of banks, and which, you know, has a trickle-down effect, security and all those other things. And that still has to be addressed.
So it sounds as if, Philip, the availability of marijuana in downtown Talkeetna and the fishing changes have not affected tourism at this point? Is it pretty much business as usual? Do you also have people coming through for the climbing the mountain? Are things pretty much as they have been in years past, or are there significant changes?
It looks more or less like business as usual this year. You know, I've got a lot of anecdotal reports. The season felt like it started a little bit slower this year, but it also started a little bit earlier than folks are used to. So there was a bit of a more gradual buildup, but at this point, you hit late June, we're getting ready to go to early July, whereas July 4th is going to be, it's going to be wall-to-wall people here. So
right.
By now, I think, yeah, it's pretty much business as usual from what I've seen.
Okay. I know in the past there have also been some strong feelings about the bed tax, and from time to time, the Borough Assembly takes a look at that, what's happening with it. Anything recent that you have picked up about opinions or desires in that area?
Nothing recent. You know, of course, there were a lot of folks upset when the proposal came up to bump the bed tax in order to fund the Gateway Visitor Center, but after that died out, haven't heard much new about that up here. It was a lot more discussion about the sewer and water service area sales tax.
Okay. And that has gone on.
And is that going to be on, where is that petition drive in terms of signatures, Philip?
Well, that's something, I've got a story in the works on that. An interesting thing about that is that the borough clerk and borough attorney have determined that that's going to have to be an area-wide ballot issue because of a couple of Alaska Supreme Court cases. And so whereas you had fewer than 100 people voting on the initial sales tax measure, in order to get it on the ballot to be repealed, the folks who are running that referendum effort are going to need just shy of 3,000 signatures borough-wide to get it back.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the deadline for that will come up pretty quick, right?
I believe it's August 4th, maybe, this year. Mm-hmm. It's like 60 days before the election, whatever that works out to be in early August. So, yeah, it's going to be a heavy lift, but they're still moving forward with it.
Okay. We did have some brief mention of bed tax at the Borough Assembly. Terry, do you remember?
Yeah, I think there was some movement to maybe make some amendments to it, but at the end of the day, I think it was a little late to make that happen. But it's always a part of discussion where the bed tax goes, how much goes to the Tourists and Visitors Association, how much stays within the borough. But in incoming budgets, it probably will happen. Another big topic that might change things, I think, is this Supreme Court ruling that will allow, companies cities and to actually get some sales tax from some of these online orders. And I don't know how that's going to affect, but it could have huge impacts. Now, the borough doesn't have sales tax, so it won't really help Talkeetna in those areas, but it could for the cities for sure that are already levying it. That could be a big boost to some cities and their budgets if it goes through.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the topics I'd also wanted to touch upon was anything that you are noticing about the campaigns that are now beginning, actually, to be out there. I'm receiving quite a bit of email solicitation, and I've noticed increasing number of signs coming up. But we have what is shaping up as a busy time just for the primary, I know. Are you noticing an increasing number of signs? Is there more discussion? Have people been going door to door in Talkeetna? What's happening up there, Philip?
Not so much. There are a handful of signs out. I've heard secondhand of people seeing signs for Randall Kowalke's Senate bid, and we've started our series of candidate interviews on our public affairs program for candidates, and we've heard back from a handful, but not nearly everyone who's got a primary challenge at this point.
Oh, okay. Well, I've had an opportunity to have a discussion with Mark Baggage after he was able to decide that he would be a candidate. And I've talked to a few other somewhat seasoned observers. And my sense is that Baggage has thoughtfully considered this and believes that he has a chance of winning, even if it's a three-way race. But there's been some suggestion, many observers have said, well, after the primary, once there is some sense of voter participation, maybe some of the polling that would be done, it would be very good for Mark Baggage and Governor Walker to sit down and say, which one of us, is there a difference? Or are we really going to do what some suggest, split the vote, and former Senator Don Levy will take all the gold?
Oh, it's not for certain going to be Senator Dunleavy either. It could be Mead Treadwell.
Right.
There's Scott Hawkins. There's several contenders in that. So that the verdict isn't out. Maybe that's part of the game of waiting to see who the opponent is. It's going to be a pretty big battle on that side with a lot of money being spent.
Right. Okay, let's then go back to the Borough Assembly meeting, which just happened. It was a very lengthy one on Tuesday. And there were a couple of things that happened there that were, I thought, extraordinary. Not the least of which, and I've mentioned this before, but we had a young woman who started in journalism, actually, at Colony High School back in the day. She went on to Stanford University, and then she went on to work for a variety of well-known publications, including Wired, and has been working with Reuters for a long, long time. But Claire Baldwin was the subject of a proclamation by the mayor of the borough because she has shared a Pulitzer Prize with two other journalists. And I thought that was worthy of a reminder that doing work here can take you all the way to the top.
Yeah, that's a remarkable accomplishment for Claire. And I thought it was kind of neat that elected officials and the mayor would honor a journalist these days.
Why? No kidding.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. I'm surprised that didn't make national news.
Well, maybe it did in some places, but Claire Baldwin certainly deserved everything. If you've read any of her earlier works and they're still available, it's kind of instructive because one of them in particular, Philip, that a long time ago in a former version of The Frontiersman, dealt with climbing Denali. And she and her family were very active. And she wrote some outdoor stuff as well as other topics that when you go back and read it, you say she showed early talent, certainly, mm-hmm. but honed it over time.
Right.
Nice.
Okay. So going to the assembly after that, Terry and I were there for a long time, three hours and 55
Four,
minutes.
Four, but who's counting? Yeah.
55 minutes. But the one topic that continues, I think, to be one that has implications wherever you are in the borough has to do with changing guidelines for multifamily dwellings. Mm. And I know that has been a hot topic in the Central Core area, as it appears that there were readings of the present guidelines that allowed for probably more units than had been intended on a small piece of property. How do multifamily dwellings appear up there in the Talkeetna area? Is there a lot of building or concern, et cetera, about that, Philip?
They appear relatively infrequently up here. But, of course, as this area continues to grow, much as the rest of the borough does, I think that's going to be more of a concern going forward. So I think there are some folks paying attention to that, but it's not nearly as pressing an issue right now as it is closer to the core area.
Okay.
How about you, Zaz? Are you getting any feedback on that, or is that something you've been
to? I'm not seeing much. I'm seeing more of them popping up in my neighborhood. I could see them from my window, from my house.
Mm-hmm.
There's a large development just off Palmer, off Wasilla Fishhook, where the two fishhooks come together. And then in my subdivision off Palmer Fishhook, there are a number of properties now that, you know, one day is empty and the next day there's four houses on it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a great financial model, I think, but not so, but with potential issues for water quality and for aesthetics. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like the proposal is to basically reduce by half, so you could, going from six to three units allowable.
Okay. Well, the last topic I want to touch upon, and this, as you may have more information about, has to do with the trials that have been happening mm-hmm. and action taken there. Have you covered some of those recently?
I'm trying to think which trial. It's hard to keep track anymore. Okay, there was a bail hearing for the 26-year-old from Palmer who is accused of killing a woman on a tube on Flat Lake.
Right.
She and two of her girlfriends were tubing, and he allegedly came around the corner and had a fairly high amount of alcohol in his system and ran over the tube as he was trying to avoid the two boats tried to avoid each other, and then he ended up going right over that tube. And one woman is dead and another is still in critical condition. I believe she's in an induced coma. So he had a bail hearing this week and was given a reduced bail. He bailed out yesterday, I got a notice, to house arrest at his parents' house on a, you know, what sounds like and is described as a very restrictive electronic monitoring system, where he also has to blow into a alcohol tester with facial recognition software. And so he won't be drinking. He doesn't have a criminal history, but he has several minor offenses involving alcohol, a couple minor consuming. So clearly alcohol has been an issue in his life for a long time, and he's not even that old. He's only 26. And so, you know, he hasn't been tried yet, so this is the pretrial process. But he is, I presume, living with his parents right now at their house in Palmer. It was a very emotional hearing. The husband of the woman who was killed, her mother, and a family friend all asked Judge Christensen not to reduce his bail. But the judge felt as if, you know, their concerns in part were about his flight risk, and she felt as if the provisions in place would take care of that.
Wow.
And then there was also a Grunwald case hearing yesterday, I believe it was. It sounds as if there are three remaining defendants. One, Dominic Johnson, is having his own trial, and the other two will not be separated into two separate trials. So if everybody else goes to trial, there will be two more trials in this case.
And when's the earliest those trials will start?
Johnson starts, I can't remember right now. It's either August or September.
Okay.
I think it's September.
Well, those families are going through a lot.
Again, so I think another month later.
Okay. And, we'll be following those cases, and probably for a long time, because as we've noted, once the event happens in the Grunwald case, we're into 2 years and counting, and it's still ongoing as a case.
And all the family members and friends that are affected, it's just tragic in both cases.
Well, we've come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. I want to thank Philip Manning, and I want to thank Zaz Hollander for calling in, because I understand you're leaving on a jet plane for the East Coast right after this.
That's right, going back to dark evenings for a little while.
Okay, and I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming to the studio today.
Have a safe weekend.
All right, for everyone. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.